You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
This week on Unforgotten.
She's flashing her lights, and then her GPS starts pinging, and she said, I can't find my phone. First message, it starts kind of just like whining.
Kind of weird because he knows he left her there.
When she doesn't show up for Cora's return, Julie starts getting a little bit worried.
Are they more friends than just coworker friends?
Mobile Police Department increased the reward for information. Off-duty sergeant mapping areas for dive training marked something unusual.
Location is east of just about everything.
And then on June 10th, the DNA results come back and confirm that it was, in fact, Daniela.
And then she knows we found her. She asked me where. You know, that I couldn't tell her. She's not ready for that. You know, she's too young for that.
Working for so long and striving for and begging for and praying for. And when you finally get that, it's not closure.
Hey, everyone. This is Sellers.
And this is Stormy.
And this is Unforgotten.
Where each episode will highlight unsolved missing, murdered, and suspicious death cases in Alabama in order to raise awareness and hopefully obtain some answers for victims and their families.
Please remember that any individual referenced in the podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law, and any opinions or views expressed in the podcast are solely those of participants. Listener discretion is advised, as some of the content discussed in the podcast may contain violence or graphic descriptions, and may not be suitable for all audiences.
And now for Season 2's Episode 1, Part 2, Daniela Vian. Hey guys, welcome back, and thanks for joining us for Part 2 of Daniela's case. If you haven't already listened to Part 1, we highly recommend that you go back and listen to that part first, so you have a background before soaking in all the details we're about to share in Part 2. In Part 1, we shared a bit of Daniela's background and the events leading up to her night out. She had met up with a group and eventually ended up at Heroes. And after, she had gotten into her car and left the group as they were all heading to Ollie's to meet up once her friend Randy was off work. A disconnect seems to occur, though. The group seemed to start changing their plans, and more confusion ensues as Daniela seems to be following Denson instead of heading to Ollie's. He isn't sure who is behind him flashing their lights, but he pulls off Government Boulevard into a gas station, and Daniela pulls in right after. The disconnect turns a bit wacky here, so pick up your bootstraps and hold on, as there's a fair bit of detail we're going to share this week. We finally left you with Denson and Daniela having pulled in at the Shell gas station, and this is where her vehicle's GPS, the GPS which has tracked all her movements since she picked up her car at the dealership, ceases to track anything further, ever. And here we are at part two of Daniela's story.
At 11:05, her GPS pings for the last time. It says stop, which would indicate that her car was turned off, right?
Yeah.
And then it never pings again. I mean, it's regularly pinging, sending these heartbeat pings, pinging when she's driving for 2 days now. And all of a sudden, it just stops when she's pulling into this gas station. And I don't think that these GPS that they install, they're not some cheap thing that are just going to like, oh, I hit a bump and they're going to fall out. That would kind of defeat the purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they're put in a manner where they're not easy to get to. I mean, maybe I could be wrong, but
I wouldn't think
it seems like they would probably not just be something where you just like reach under, like you get tangled up in a cord or something and you could accidentally pull it out.
Right.
It's kind of where I'm going with that. I mean, I guess if you knew what you were doing, you could probably.
I mean, and it's the first day she had the car. So it's not like it had a lot of time to like, over time, it jostled loose or something like that. That's ridiculous to think that.
She wasn't taking it like off road or anything. So, and I know things malfunction, weird things happen, but there's a whole lot of weird here.
Yeah. A lot of crazy going on. Yeah.
She's flashing her lights and then her GPS stops pinging. And he says, Denson says, well, when we pulled in, she said, I can't find my phone. It was like, well, did you have it when you left Dublin? And they get out and they're looking for her phone. And I guess, you know how, if you can't find your phone, sometimes you'll be like, hey, call my number. Let me see if I can hear it.
Right.
So he calls her on Facebook Messenger. And I wasn't aware that this was even a thing on Facebook Messenger until this case. But if you call somebody on Facebook Messenger and they don't answer, you actually get a voicemail like you would on a phone if they didn't answer the phone.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it makes sense, but.
Apparently. And I'm not sure that it was well known by anybody at that point, because it sounds like there were two messages that were left inadvertently on her Facebook Messenger. And the first message, it starts with what sounds like a female, kind of just like whining.
Yeah.
Not, you know, and I don't know that that's necessarily the most accurate description. She could have been saying something, but you can't understand it. And to me, it sounds like somebody who is very inebriated, like slurring words, all of these things. Well, you have Hannah, who said earlier, well, she appeared like she might be a little intoxicated in this video that she sent me. But then, and then you have this audio where there's a female voice in it who is not clear when she's speaking or whatever. And then you hear a guy, presumably Denson, saying something about, you know, did you leave it at Dublin's or something like that. Then that's at 11:11. And then at 11:12, there's another message and you can hear the same male and a female. The female in the second call is very clear. Like, she's speaking plainly. It doesn't sound like there's any kind of intoxication or anything like that. And there's been a question about whether or not that second female is even Danielle. There are some people that think that, no, that doesn't sound like her. It's not her.
Right.
That's never been confirmed or anything like that, because the shell had surveillance. And NBC 15 at the time actually got the surveillance video. And I remember when they posted it, the reporter just filmed the surveillance screen with her phone, because you could see the outline of her phone in the reflected back. They posted it, and then within minutes, it was gone, because apparently Mobile Police Department called and said, hey, we need you to take that down. They did leave up a timeline of what they saw in the video. And so they say, you know, at 11:05, you see two cars pulling into the Shell gas station. Now, if you look, you can still find this video online. I looked. I found it. You can't tell very much about it.
Mm-hmm.
You see the headlights, and that's basically it. There are gas pumps that block from where that surveillance video came from. There are gas pumps that kind of block the entrance. So really, you just see the two cars, the two headlights, two sets of headlights pulling in.
Yeah. And I'm sure that MPD could analyze it enough to figure out between that and the pings.
And honestly, they probably, because it's a recording of a recording, probably whatever they had from the original one is clearer than what was made available briefly to the public.
Right.
So we have at 11:07, her car makes the final ping. At that same time, apparently one of the two cars leaves the Shell gas station. One stays, one leaves.
and her GPS stops working. At 11:08, another car pulls into the Shell gas station. Now, there is no way to know whether this car that pulls in at 11:08 is the same car that left and it just circled back, or if it's a different car. That's never been talked about as far as any confirmation on, like, yes, we know it was the same person that came back, or we think this was absolutely somebody different.
Right. Yeah.
But the car does pull in. And then at 11:11, we have the calls on the Facebook Messenger from Denson to Daniela. So if that's the case, then you have to think that the car that left initially and came back was him. Well, presumably. Because if he'd left, why would he be calling her cell phone? And you can tell, like, when you listen to the audio, like, you can, it's outside.
Yeah.
It's not, you know.
Like, he got out of the car and called.
And he's talking to somebody.
Right.
Like, he's asking a question. So, if he wasn't with her, he wouldn't have been talking to her. So, you have to assume that whoever pulled in was him. At least, the car that pulled in at 11:08. I had asked way back, you know, why do you think that he called her on Facebook Messenger? Why wouldn't he just call her number? Apparently, Daniela would somewhat frequently lose her phone. And she probably didn't remember the number, was one reason for that.
Yeah. Well, they just became Facebook friends, so it was probably convenient. He probably had all that information right at his fingertips.
And he may not have even asked for a number. He may have just immediately went to that. But I would have said, hey, what's your number for me to call?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that's common. Everybody else might not have, but at 11:11 and 11:12, we have those two voicemails that come through on her Facebook Messenger. And it's one of them, I think it's the second one. You hear the guy say, well, you don't want to touch that or something. And I mean, it's very out of context, obviously, because nobody really knows what's going on or who they're talking to, but it's kind of eerie to listen to.
It is, yeah.
While all this is going on, at some point, Mallory gets to Ollie's and meets Randy, and they're waiting for Daniela and Denson to arrive. Well, at 11:17, Denson called Randy to explain that Daniela lost her phone. He's going back to Dublin to help her look for it. That came from the Case File podcast. I'll explain why I think where that timestamp comes from in a minute. I could be off base on that, but I think it came from Julie looking at Daniela's phone.
Gotcha.
At 11:24... both cars leave the Shell station. So from 11:08 to 11:24, there are two cars sitting at this closed gas station, and then they leave. What the press conferences said was the cars were turning towards Dublin's, which this is like, they could have been going anywhere, to be honest. Like, yeah. Dublin's isn't close to this gas station. So I guess maybe the assumption is they're going back to Dublin's, so they're turning towards Dublin's, but really they could have been going anywhere. But Mobile Police Department says that Daniela followed Denson for a while before turning her car towards a more populated part of town. I don't know what that means.
They don't either.
Because that whole area is populated. So I don't really understand that at all. Because
no, not a way to... I mean, I guess, well, if you look at the Shell station, maybe that area just doesn't look like it's very populated. Like, there's a lot of green space, and it's maybe, you know, the
that's more like industrial, I guess. Like,
yeah,
when you first pull off the interstate, there's businesses mostly,
right?
But literally, you weird. Go to the next red light, and there's a big neighborhood, like. There's houses all down through there. It's not like you had to drive 20 minutes before you got to a house. It literally is like you can see them when you get off the interstate. So,
right. Yeah.
I'm not sure which direction they decided was more populated than Mobile. Honestly, they never elaborated to say, like,
yeah.
Oh, she kept going in the neighborhood.
Yeah. And to be honest, if they were going towards Dublin's, because Dublin's in the opposite direction of, like, Mobile Center.
Like, Dublin's out by the college, University of South Alabama, which is, you know, right where Heroes is, too. But, and they're obviously
populated, you would think, like, going towards town.
And there's like, obviously houses out there like that. Like that, that area is incredibly busy all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what they considered a more populated part of town. Because in my head, it doesn't get much more populated than where they were, that center right there. Now, another thing that they said that I thought was really interesting, because, you know, I like words. I feel like there's always a lot from statements in the way that they're worded that you maybe don't notice at first until you go back and look. And so one of the things that they said from the beginning was she was last seen occupying her vehicle. And I thought that's very specific, because if you thought she was driving, wouldn't you say she was last seen driving?
Yeah.
The Chevy Cruze. But they just said occupying.
That's true. Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a pretty specific word. It gives no indication that she was actually the one driving her car. And it made me wonder, was there other people in the car, or at least another person?
Huh.
I just thought, and maybe that's just, you know, that's just how they worded it. It really wasn't meant to mean anything else, but I tend to think that you probably word things in the most truthful way that you can without giving away the information. And that was one thing I learned in that statement analysis course that I did, was that people don't like to lie. Like, it goes against human nature.
Yeah.
When you look at things and you read things, you always just assume that they're being truthful in what they're saying. And so you don't look for the lies necessarily. You look for the areas of deception, which are, you know, things that go from very specific times to very broad, vague times. You know, after a while, or a little bit later, or sometime that morning, it's a way to lessen the lie or avoid having to lie outright. Like, it's just an omission. Sometimes that means that they're trying to avoid talking about what actually happened in that time frame.
Right, yeah.
It made me wonder if they had said, well, she was last seen driving her car, that wouldn't have been truthful.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just didn't know.
That's what it kind of sounds like to me. I mean, yeah, that's true.
I mean, it could be also that there was no way for them to know for sure, but, that could be just really overthinking it, you know, but it's,
I don't know. I'm with you though. A lot of people, when they say things, they unintentionally say exactly what they mean.
Mm-hmm. So 11:24, they leave. 11:37, Denson gets to Dublin's. He sends Mallory a text message, and this is weird to me. He sends her a message saying that he's getting the phone, but he sends her a photo, like messages her a picture of him, and supposedly the caption was, getting phone, just got back here, but somehow lost to Daniela. Why would he send a selfie of himself inside the bar?
That's kind of weird. I mean, I don't know. I guess.
Oh, just in case you don't believe that I'm here, here I am. But this is your friend.
I mean, that's the way it comes off. Yeah.
Why did she need to know that you were in the bar?
Yeah.
You've already told her what you're doing. You've called them on your way. This should have been a quick trip. That's weird. It's weird.
He's still at Dublin's, what, 15 minutes later or so?
First,
trying to call Daniela, and it says,
well, he does call her, but, and send her a message, but I don't know whether he was still at Dublin at that point or if he'd already left. Like, I don't know if that was it, because it said, call me, Dublin had your phone, but I don't know if that's because he was still there.
Yeah.
Or if it was like he'd waited around and he'd left at this point, because he sends the, he says that when he gets there, there's an employee or a bartender or somebody that's like out in the parking lot when he pulls in. They ask him like, hey, are you looking for a phone? I found one outside and I gave it to the bartender inside. So he goes in to get the phone and I guess waits around for a little while thinking that she's on her way, and then she doesn't actually show up.
Yeah.
And so
yes. I guess where we do know is he doesn't get to Ollie's until 12, which is a lot longer than what it would take to get.
At least based on the podcast and things that we've looked at, that's what time he got there. He had attempted to call her on Facebook Messenger. Unsurprisingly, he didn't get an answer. Then he sent her a Facebook message that said, call me, Dublin had your phone. Now,
again. He called her. How did he expect her to get this?
Yeah.
And he's sitting there with her phone.
I know.
And if she's driving. And
we all do really dumb things sometimes.
I know. I know. I have like walked around with my sunglasses on my head or literally been talking on my phone with it in my hand and been like, God, I cannot find my phone. Oh my God.
I just got in the car the other day at the grocery store with my husband I'm looking around. He goes, what are you looking for? What did you lose? I go, I can't find are my glasses in here? And he goes, they're on your face.
I've done that before.
I had been thinking just a few minutes before that I was going to take them off, put my sunglasses on. So I was thinking I didn't have them on.
But you know, he has her phone. So I know. Was it like, oh, wait, it's ringing in my hand?
Right.
But let me send her this message.
Yeah. The whole thing is weird.
Because you think that she's coming with, like, you've left this gas station, she's following you, and that she's going to, where is she going to get a phone from? If you've got her phone, and she's supposed to be in transit to you. So.
And I know that, I mean, it very much sounds like he's under the spotlight right now with us. We're, like, scrutinizing everything he's doing, and that it's everything he's doing is suspicious. All the little things individual, yes, they could all just coincidentally happen the way that they happened.
Yeah.
But it does raise your eyebrows a little bit when you put all of those little things together.
Because you would assume, right, that, okay, maybe she thought he was going back to Dublin, so she just went ahead and went to Ollie's, mm-hmm. where the other people are. Well, you've got her phone. Why don't you call... And your own phone, because you've texted one of the people at Ollie's telling them this is where I'm at. Why didn't you call them and say, hey, is she there? Like, let her know I've got her phone. Mm-hmm. Because obviously she's not going to get whatever call you make because you've picked it up and have it. And instead of sending a message that says, call me, Dublin had your phone, why wouldn't you call the people you know have a phone to say, hey, is she there with you? Will you let her know I've got this? Or... Yeah, whatever, because that just doesn't make sense to me. And again, all of these timestamps, because her GPS stopped, like, I guess we probably should remind people, like, the GPS stopped pinging at 11:05.
Right.
So,
everything after that
is coming from
witness accounts. Supposedly.
So, I guess, like, to kind of jump ahead before we move on, whenever Julie gets Daniela's phone, she actually does kind of go through it to see, like, who she was last talking to, if there's anything, any kind of clue or anything that could maybe tell her where Daniela might be. And so I think that's probably where these timestamps came from.
That would make sense.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The audio of the Facebook Messenger calls, those are recorded.
So we're going to share the audio from the voicemails for you, and we're going to play it once at the regular speed, and then you'll hear it again a little bit slowed down, just because I think that everybody we know who has listened to this has probably listened to it at like half speed about a gazillion times trying to hear what it says. So we thought we'd do that for you.
Dubliner. That's at 11:11.
Oh, careful. I'm there.
No, okay.
You don't want to touch that.
And that was at 11:12.
My understanding is that's Tyler that reads off the times. He says that's 11:11 and then 11:12. He had went into Daniela's Facebook after this and recorded those. They've been circulated. So I think that's where most of these timestamps come from. That would be my assumption anyway.
And that would make sense. I mean, how else would they really have them?
And then they talk to, I mean, Julie talked to Denson, obviously, because they go together to file the report. And then she'd also messaged Randy. So I think that's where, you know, this came from messages and conversations that she had, would be my assumption.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm not sure how we would know what they were doing. You know, that's 11:52. He's messaging her, hey, I've got your phone. Call me with the phone that you don't have. And I guess, you know, she could have logged into her Facebook from somebody else's phone, whatever, a computer. And that's when she would have got it. But I don't think.
It's kind of weird because he knows he left her there.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows he left her in the parking lot there. So
you knew she was following you and you were comfortable enough stopping at this closed gas station for this person that you didn't know was following you. But you knew she was supposed to be following you back and you didn't like check along the way to make sure she was still back there. Mm. Like if I have people that are following me, especially now that my son is driving, I pay attention in my rearview mirror because I'm like, if they get stopped at a red light or something, like, but that's just how I am, I guess. Like, I pay it. Are they still back there? And yeah. He didn't.
Yeah.
Again, just weird. So around midnight, Denson joins Randy and Mallory at Ollie's. And obviously, Daniela is not there. At 12:04, he attempts to call Daniela a second time by video on Facebook Messenger and gets no answer. Again, I guess the assumption is she'll log into her Facebook at some point from somewhere.
Yeah.
But he's got her phone. At 12:33, he tries a third time to reach Daniela. Doesn't get her. And supposedly at this point, he asks Randy, because Randy's the one that she knew, what he should do with her phone as far as like trying to get it back to her. And Randy suggested, oh, just take it by P.F. Chang's where she works. She'll get it on her next shift or whatever. Denson keeps the phone. And so,
I guess, are we assuming that P.F. Chang's isn't open at 11 or 12:30 in the morning? Yeah, maybe.
It probably not at that time, because it's the mall itself closes at like 9 or 10 when it's not the holiday. I think it's like 9, maybe 10 on a Friday.
That's what I was thinking. And even if some of the restaurants were open, it probably wasn't open that much later.
Yeah. And because this, I mean, at that point, it's like after midnight, so probably not.
Mm-hmm.
So. Now, like, we're into the 8th. He leaves Ollie's, takes Daniela's phone with him. He also So he's driving a rental car that day because he traveled for a meeting at work or something. And like returns his rental car at some point to the rental place before going home is what we've been told.
Right. Yeah. They dropped it there and just
like 1 a.m.
Yeah. You don't have to check it or anything. You just drop it in the parking lot and then pick up your own car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a random time to be dropping it off. But I guess if you're just driving by, maybe it seems more convenient. Not really sure.
I guess. Yeah. You're nearby. Who knows?
Then on the 18th at 7:30 in the morning, Hannah texts Danielle and asks, you know, was she okay? She didn't get an answer. At some point in the morning, Tyler actually called Daniela's phone from jail. Denson has the phone, so he answers it and tells Tyler, hey, I found her phone in the parking lot. And so Tyler tells him, call my mom, and gives him Julie's number. He calls Julie, and it says this happened around 7:32. Also, not 7:32, but 7:30 also. Denson calls Julie, tells her he has Daniela's phone, doesn't mention that he'd seen her the night before, he knew her, anything like that, just that he found this phone. And she tells him to drop it off at P.F. Chang's. Same thing that Randy told him. Mm-hmm. Well, she then calls the apartment complex and asks them to put a note on Daniela's door saying, hey, give me a call whenever you get this. Or whatever, you know. And then a few hours later, Julie actually went by the apartment because she still hadn't heard from her. And the note is still on the door from the landlord. So it's a Tuesday that she goes out. The 17th is a Tuesday. We're into Wednesday. They've left a note on her door at the apartment. Nobody's heard from her. On Thursday, the 19th, Patrick, PJ, and Cora came home. They'd been out of town visiting family. Patrick was Julie's husband, and they had been visiting he had taken the kids to go visit his family, and they were coming home on Thursday. And Daniela had plans to be there when Cora got back. Like that was understood that she would be there when Cora got back.
Right. Yeah.
She doesn't show up. And so when she doesn't show up for Cora's return, Julie starts getting a little bit worried, and she messages her on Facebook Messenger. She said she kept checking for a response, but the message had not been viewed, and Facebook was saying she hadn't been active in 2 days. So then she posted a message on Daniela's wall asking her to call her, because obviously she doesn't have a phone. And now she could have assumed that she would have got it back.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. She was doing this thinking maybe she did get it back from P.F. Chang's.
Yeah. And so she had told him drop it off at her workplace. The note's still on her door on Wednesday or whatever. And then Facebook's saying she hadn't been active. So, like, you know, she's trying to get in touch with her in the best way that she knows how. And she's not responding. Well, later that Thursday evening on the 19th, Hannah had been trying to message Daniela. She texted Daniela on the phone. She messaged her on Facebook Messenger. She wasn't getting a response. Well, then Hannah said she called friends to see if anybody had heard from Daniela. Somebody said, oh, they saw her at Heroes on Tuesday night. So Hannah says she calls Heroes and asks the manager to check the parking lot for Daniela's car. Daniela's car wasn't there, and the manager offered to check the schedule to see who was working that night. He then calls Hannah back and says Randy confirmed that Daniela had been at Heroes and had been hanging out with Denson and Mallory. This is all coming from Hannah. At 9:17, Hannah says she contacts Denson, said she didn't know him, but she found him on Facebook, and she sent him a message asking if he knew where Daniela was or had any information about it. And then supposedly he calls Hannah on that later that evening and tells her that he hadn't seen Daniela since Tuesday night, but he had her phone and had been trying to get in contact with her so he could return it. After that, Hannah goes to Daniela's apartment, and she's not there. We're through Thursday now. No one's seen or heard from her. On Friday morning, the 20th, Hannah sent Daniela a message again and then drove by her apartment again on her way to cosmetology school. She's still not there. Daniela was scheduled to work at P.F. Chang's on the 20th at 10, except she doesn't show up. So Hannah calls Julie and messages Denson and says, hey, there's still been no sign of Daniela. She's not at work, all of these things. And so they all go through these messages of like calling and stuff, trying to figure out what's going on, and decide that they're going to go report her missing. Julie and Denson end up meeting at the police department precinct on Airport in Dawes so that Julie can file this report. And Denson was going to hand over the phone, give a statement, whatever. Well, they don't take missing person reports at that precinct, so they sent them to the Government Boulevard location, which is like the headquarters. Before they leave the Airport Boulevard office, Denson gives Julie the phone. And so between the airport office and headquarters, Julie kind of flips through her phone. She said she called Hannah. And I don't remember if Julie's the one that said this or if Hannah said it, but Julie supposedly got the passcode for Daniela's phone from Hannah so that she could check her messages and calls. I guess she checks that, you know, on the way or whatever. And that's where I think some of these timestamps come from. They get to headquarters. Denson gives his statement regarding Tuesday. Hannah gives a statement about, you know, it's just out of character for Daniela to not be in contact and to not show up for work. Also, she's not there when her daughter gets back, which is unusual. Julie gave them as much information as she could and gave them Daniela's phone. Well, then Julie and a police officer go over to Daniela's apartment. According to the Case File podcast, Julie, the officer, and a crime scene technician go to Daniela's apartment to conduct an assessment, but nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Julie went home, logged into Daniela's Facebook, and found several missed phone calls and two voicemails from Denson. And Julie said the reason she could do this was like her information was stored on their computer. That's where they find out that Denson had been making all these calls. So she calls on the afternoon, evening of the 20th and tells police, hey, I found these in her Facebook Messenger. And they tell her, don't log back into that account to make sure nothing's tampered with. Julie asked them about potential closed circuit TV footage from any location that might would show where she was at. And she's told no such footage had been found. So imagine her surprise when the news station airs that shell surveillance video.
Right.
And so she calls the police again and was like, what is this? You said there was none, but here it is. And instead of them talking to Julie, they call the news station and demand that they remove it. So, and the station did. They left the timeline up, but they took the video down. So all of that is from Tuesday to Friday. But my understanding is like there's not a whole lot that you can gather or glean from the video. It's not that great of footage. I mean, then just looking at the recording of a recording, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So remember earlier we said they had a court hearing scheduled for July, Cora's guardianship. So on July 24th, they went to court to finalize the guardianship and custody agreement for Cora. The motion talks about Daniela was fully cooperative and they made the custody appointment since she, you know, was missing and not able to attend the hearing. They signed over the guardianship to Julie and Patrick, but I think there was a note in it like, you know, should she return or when she returns, we'll revisit this to make sure she is still in agreement.
Right.
Then on the 25th, Tyler is released from jail. So he's been in jail this whole time. He's been incarcerated. And I know that there's been rumors or questions about whether or not Tyler could have been involved. And I asked Shauna about that. But he's incarcerated the whole time. So no.
I don't even know possible, the details of all of that either. I just know that something happened prior to her giving birth, right. And then he was there that day for her, and then
turned himself in. At this point, like, he's there when she gives birth, but then he is in jail through this. So, yes. Like, he cannot be a suspect as far as being the person responsible for this because he was in jail.
Right. And it's not, like, Tyler's not the type of person that has connections to orchestrate something like that.
When he did get released from jail, though, he did go to the apartment that he shared with Daniela, and he took some items of value, and he pawned them. And when Julie found out, she went and bought them back. Like, that's not okay.
Yeah. And I'm sure he probably needed the money.
Yeah. And then on the 25th, that same day, Daniela's case is transferred from missing persons to the homicide unit. And the reason that they give for this is because they have more resources to investigate the case. They said they have no evidence that a homicide actually occurred. It's just that they have more resources to put into looking for. On the 26th, they say there's no evidence of foul play in her disappearance. You know, I guess they confirm it, that yes, it's been handed over, but, you know, no, I think they actually give a press conference that day. On July 27th, according to the Case File podcast, Hannah actually went into Daniela's apartment. She said Tyler gave her a key and asked her to let him know if she saw anything unusual or missing or whatever. And she said that Daniela's possessions all were still there as far as she knew.
Which is kind of curious to me. How would she really, I mean, were they more friends than just coworker friends?
Supposedly. I mean,
were they that close?
Supposedly. About a week after her disappearance, they held the first candlelight vigil on July 27th. At this point, I remember vividly, like, this was on the news regularly. I mean, this is how it always happens. It's something new. It's a hot topic. Everybody's paying attention. So It was on the news a good bit. And then they were hosting these vigils and there were news outlets showing up and doing live videos. They went, I think the first one was actually held at Medal of Honor Park, which was where Daniela would always take Cora to play. It wasn't like not far from her apartment. And there was a big turnout and the chaplain was there and it was really nice in general. And basically they were passing out flyers, but what they were doing was they were asking people to put the flyers in their like car window if possible. That way, if they were parked in a parking lot, whatever, anybody walking by would see the flyer. Just whatever way they could come up with to reach the largest number of people. Because we say it all the time. Somebody saw her.
Right.
You know, we know she's at these restaurants and these bars where there are a lot of people. You know, I couldn't tell you people that were at a restaurant that I was at Friday. Okay. You know, like.
They'd have to do something out of the ordinary.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe if I were looking around a lot, and I do try to do that actually now because of this. Like,
isn't that crazy that we do what we do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always sit facing the door and making sure, like, who's coming in, who's going out, you know, things like that, especially if I'm like in kind of an unfamiliar place. Mm-hmm. So maybe I could see it in that instance, but like other times I couldn't tell you who was sitting at the table next to me.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand a little bit, but it's just hard to believe, like, nobody.
Right.
After the vigil, but before the end of July, because we have some entries where we don't have dates for them specifically.
Right.
But detectives did go into Daniela's apartment and do a search, and they noted that she had a whiteboard in her apartment that had different notes related to the goals, and it had what they assumed was the amount of money that she had saved on the board. And according to the note, she had had $1,200 that she had saved.
So I wonder if that's, you know, they may not have found the money, but I wonder if what they used, she used for the car and gave Julie and all of that.
And yeah, because she had like, it just said she had an envelope of cash. And so I don't know how much she put down on a down payment or anything like that. But, you know, she also goes to the mall to buy some stuff for Cora and but that could be what she had taken with her,
like to go out to. Yeah,
but I'm not sure. I don't think there was ever any official word about whether they found any money at all in her apartment or how much they would have expected her to have on her, and I think that's probably some information that they would probably withhold simply because if somebody has caused this to happen and they've taken money from her, and Mobile has an idea of how much money that would be, then they're not going to release that because it would be something that only the person involved would know.
Right. Yep.
By the end of July, the rent was past due on the apartment, and they were evicted. Julie said the building manager would not allow her to come collect Daniela's possessions, and they put them on the sidewalk for Julie to come get it.
Not crappy.
And I'm like, come on, this is a different kind of circumstance.
Obviously. Yeah. This isn't like she just skipped because of this. If it was very, It's very obvious from all the publicity and everything that this is a unique situation. So
there's still not a whole lot of updates coming out. I mean, it's still regularly on the news, but then August 2nd, Mobile Police Department published, they had issued a $2,000 reward for information related to Daniela's disappearance. And what the press release said was, the Mobile Police Department is seeking the public's assistance in locating 24-year-old Daniela Vian.
Diane was last seen July 17th, 2018, in the 3500 block of Government Boulevard. She was last believed to be wearing a Melon Mushroom t-shirt and hat. She was last known to be occupying a deep blue 2014 Chevy Cruze with a Pearl Motors paper tag. The Mobile Police Department is offering a $2,000 reward to anyone who can provide help in locating Daniela Vian. If her whereabouts are known, please notify the Mobile Police Department, and then it gave their phone number. That is basically all that was released this entire time. Like, that was what everything that was basically said. Yeah. Like, it was a 3500 block of Government Boulevard. They did not publish a photo of what she was wearing. Like, they used her driver's license photo, which is fine. That's not a big deal.
But honestly, I mean, her normal, kind of her normal everyday doesn't really look like that. To me, at least in the pictures that I've seen of, you know, her casual pictures.
Well, she had on this hat and stuff, but, and if I remember right, they asked them to release like a still image of what she was wearing when she went into Heroes, because Heroes had surveillance, and they wouldn't do it. And to me, I'm like, why? Because that's her, that's what she had on. People might remember that pink hat with a donut on it before they remember like her face, because it's something different. That is by and large the entirety of the information that they provided to the public. And there was no information about where she had visited that night that I recall. That was all stuff that I think Julie and Shauna and all of them that were working towards trying to figure out where she'd been, they got the information about, here's where all we've been, that she went to Heroes, she went to Dublin, she, you know, and I think they're the ones that put it out. I don't remember at any point Mobile Police Department coming out and saying, like, she was last seen here, but she visited or may have visited this, been in this area in this time frame. Because now, I'll be honest, Cleburne County has, like, set the bar. Cleburne County had a woman go missing, Wendy Rose Thindula. I might have said her last name wrong. But they posted a detailed timeline when they announced that she was missing. They had the dates that she left from Ohio to Alabama, that she entered Alabama and arrived on the at a mountain area and hiked a portion of a trail, that she left Alabama and traveled to South Carolina, and then she came back to Alabama. Then they've got all of these dates, and it's very detailed. And again, understanding that there is information that can't be provided to the public because it's things that only people that would have been around at the time would know, I get it. But when you have one agency that is willing to put all of this information, and they weren't specific on the time frames, they gave the dates that she was known to be traveling in this area, why can't that be done in all of the cases?
Yes.
But so, like, they have kind of set a bar now where, like, if one agency can do it, there's zero reason why others can't.
Right.
And when all you're giving out is that she was last seen in this one block area, at some point she turned towards a more populated area. We live in Mobile County. It's like the second biggest county in Alabama. I don't remember if Baldwin County's passed it or not. I don't think they have, but it's all populated. That doesn't tell anybody anything. So, like, the least you could have done was said she was at Heroes and Dublin's. If you are a patron at either one of these establishments, let us know if you remember seeing her. They didn't. Again, I know it's going to be, well, there are just some things you're not, you know, the public's not privy to. Well, she was in public. That should be public information.
Yeah. And it's not to mention the fact that she was last seen at the 3500 block on Government Boulevard. Well, yes, that's an address, but why make everybody go try to look up the address? Nobody's going to, unless they're like us.
Seriously,
so why not just say, like, what the establishment was that they were sitting at?
And government is forever long.
I know.
So it's like, when they said 3,500, I'm like, where the crap is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mug in.
Like, and I just to say, a lot of articles I read on things like this are that way, and I've never ever understood why they don't just say I mean, and, it doesn't reflect. I mean, if it said something like the manager of these apartments came out and was really rude and blah, 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 then, or, you know, the gas station attendant came out and was cussing him out, or, you know, like, yeah. Then you wouldn't want to smear the establishment's name. They're just parked there, for crying out loud.
Or maybe it's like if something happened at the Shell gas station, it was like putting out the address would. No, because again, who knows where the 3,500 block of government is? Oh, we do now because of this. But like just when they put it out, I didn't know where that was out. So if somebody drove by and actually saw something happening at the Shell station, they probably would have been like, well, I don't know if that's a 3,500 block or not. But I guess maybe that's a way to encourage people who might have seen something out of the ordinary to call, and it would be a way to validate their tip.
That's ridiculous because more people would be likely to call if they knew they saw something at the Shell gas station that they were talking about.
I mean, you would think, but
I don't buy the address would work. No. Nobody's, I mean, people are lazy. They don't go look it up.
And there's a bunch of cars that are driving by. I mean, when you look at the crappy recording of the recording, like you see cars driving by. So,
yeah. All right. Well, said my piece.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
There's not much news that comes out in August. And then we roll into September, and Jason Dykes is arrested on domestic violence charges for strangulation, assault, and unlawful imprisonment. Jason was, or is, Julie's nephew. The victim that brought this information to the police department claimed that she'd been held against her will and all of these other allegations, the strangulation, assault, all of those things, and then claimed that Jason had said something threatening about Daniela. So they end up going out to the property and doing a raid on the property and arrest Jason. They find no evidence at the property related to Daniela or her disappearance, anything indicating that she'd even been out there, at least that we're aware of. And apparently the allegations were later proven to be false and the charges were dropped. The article actually related to that says, NBC 15 learned that large banging noises were heard by neighbors just down the road from the home during the moments police used an armored vehicle to breach the perimeter. Well, that's interesting. It said three people were detained and one was arrested. Jason Dykes was arrested and charged with domestic violence, strangulation, or suffocation. Domestic violence third, assault third, and unlawful imprisonment second. So according to the criminal complaints filed in the district court, Dykes is accused of locking a former girlfriend in a room several times over the course of a month. The lock was on the outside of the door. He was also accused of hitting the victim with a whip and choking her with a rod with an attached cord. Dykes is the nephew of Julie Dykes, the woman who has acted like a mother to missing mom Daniela Vian for years. The alleged victim said Jason Dykes said something threatening enough about Daniela Vian that it raised red flags to law enforcement, which is why police called in dogs and search crews to the remote location in Theodore, both to search for evidence of the domestic violence claims and to see if there was any trace of Daniela.
I kind of wonder if the girlfriend, whatever, drops charges. Not the
She may have recanted her statement. Mm-hmm. You know, it could have been a fight thing. People do that. I mean, it doesn't make it right, but they get mad and then haul out.
She could have felt threatened enough that she just decided it wasn't worth it. She was afraid. Who knows?
True. But they didn't find anything related to Daniela. And I guess they let him go, which is what they should have done. You know, it wasn't true anyway. Still in September, Julie created a GoFundMe to help aid in the investigation. She was frustrated with the lack of information, and she wanted to get more flyers and stuff. She wanted billboards, things like that, put up. And so all that stuff takes money. We talk about that.
And so she started the GoFundMe, and she used the funds raised to print flyers to put up in other places, because they would put them up and then, you know, they get messed up, they get wet, they get taken down, whatever. So they would, you know, were frequently going and making sure these flyers were out for people to see. And then she also had billboards posted with Daniela's photo. So, I mean, this is Tyler's mom, yeah, who has basically, you know, Daniela is like a daughter to her, and she's working her butt off on this to try to get as much information out as she can. On September 24th, Mobile Police Department increased the reward for information to $5,000. And Mobile Police Department published a tip and info blog on their website.
Daniela Vian disappeared. Mobile Police Department created a blog. Detectives just want to find this 24-year-old mother. Investigators want people to post what they know about Vian's disappearance. Police say the blog will serve as a centralized two-way communication hub with the police department and the community. MPD looking for any information, no matter how small you might think it is. We have a link to that blog on our website, fox10tv.com, and also the reward for information leading.
It didn't stay up for very long, if I recall, because I think they just started getting, unfortunately, a lot of spam comments with crap links in it, you know? Yeah. And so right. I don't know that it actually stayed up very long, actually. Let me just go ahead and click this link and see if it's still up. That would be interesting. Oh, the press release is still up.
Hell yeah.
So when you click on the link for the blog, it actually just says 404 error. It's been taken down. So they had flyers. They did the vigils. They had t-shirts. I had a t-shirt and it faded. I washed it and it came off. And I'm so, like, it got really faded where you could just barely see Daniela's face. And now you can't see it at all. And I'm so bummed about it because I wore it all the time.
Yeah.
So that was disappointing. And what Chief Lawrence Batiste said was, we're just using the resources that we have available to us. This was about, you know, putting the blog up. We just want to make sure that we keep the conversation going about Daniela. And it said the blog was set up so that anyone could post information that could help the investigation, and that his goal in general was just to keep people talking. And so when people are talking and sharing information, they share information that may trigger a thought in somebody else's mind about what they saw or did not see that can help us later on down the road. And then they said her car last pinged at the Shell gas station on Government Boulevard. In September, Batiste said, "I'm hopeful that we will find her alive because it's happened before. So we won't give up hope until we get something that tells us we shouldn't hope for that anymore." So even though her case had been moved to homicide for the resources, like we talked about, you know, they were still operating kind of under the assumption that she had just willingly left. And I'll be honest, like, that seems like it could have been a possibility in this instance. It wasn't, obviously, but
it's plausible.
Yeah, with her getting the car and thinking, like, okay, this is my chance to go start fresh somewhere.
Yeah.
And just kind of get away from everything. I mean, it doesn't sound like it would have been reasonable or logical to her because of how close she was with her daughter, but it wouldn't have been, I don't think, surprising if that's what had happened. So in October of 2018, they held a second candlelight vigil. Nothing's coming out. Around the time that they had the second vigil, Cora's birthday occurred. She turned 5. And Daniela wasn't there, and that's just heartbreaking.
She never missed anything like that for Cora.
No, and that's what I always go back to. It's like, gosh, it hurts my heart for a daughter. In March of 2019, March 8th of 2019, they had another vigil at Medal of Honor Park for Daniela's 26th birthday. At the end of April, there are multiple stories out here about this. One is that an off-duty sergeant mapping areas for dive training marked something unusual at the launch in Saraland for Bayou Sara. Another one just says it was an officer who was on his off day, just out enjoying his boat, noticed something on his sonar, knew they had an upcoming training thing, and so he just marked it. Not really sure whether it was an intentional, like, I'm searching for things for dive training, or if it was just like an accidental thing, because accidentally somebody was testing out sonar in Chickasaw and discovered a trailblazer in the water. And it turned out it was a lady who'd been missing since 2021. So obviously, you know, that's kind of how things are found when people just are out.
And we've heard stories like that before, too.
Yeah. Where this spot was roughly 17 miles north of that Shell gas station. It was in a drop-off right there that was roughly 20 to 30 feet. This is a small public boat launch, by the way. It is in the...
It was only like 40, 45 feet from the shore. Something like that.
Yeah. It doesn't look very far.
No.
Because you can go back and look at the news broadcasts that were done. And like they weren't back there the entire time, but they did get shots of when they were working and stuff. And it doesn't look like it's that far.
This location, by the way, is like completely east of just about everything that they were. I mean, like everything else was west from where the Shell station is or yeah. directly north.
Yeah.
And not very far. I mean, her apartments were probably only like, I don't know, maybe 10 miles from the Shell station. I don't even think it was that.
And it wouldn't, like, this would not have been the route for her to go back home, even from,
at all.
You know, yeah. like, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to make a circle, like, because you'd have to go that way and turn around and come back where you were. And then where it's at is in this small neighborhood
yeah,
with twists and turns to get to it. Now, granted, the road that the launch is on, like it essentially dead ends into the water. So at night, if you're driving through there, if you don't know where you're at, I mean, there's a solid possibility that you're just, you know, trucking along and run off in the water. I think it's a little better lit now, but I mean, that is a plausible explanation. And it wasn't actually very long after her car was found that a truck did drive off the boat ramp. I think it might have been one of those things where like right. they didn't put their vehicle in park when they were launching and, you know, rolled down. But where it went, though, was just right there off the boat launch. Like, it wasn't far. It's not, I guess, very deep right there. This was more over where her car was like in front of this little bitty parking area.
Yeah.
So it's not even like it just went off the boat ramp. And I guess I know people are going to be like, well, there's currents. Okay.
The way it was. If they actually saw the scene, they wouldn't think that. I don't think.
I mean, yes, cars float. They don't sink automatically. I know that. They did actually like put balloons and things on the side of Daniela's car to like lift it out. So they go out on May 2nd with the dive team to like look at what's been marked. And they discover the Chevy Cruze with the Pearl Motors tag and human remains in it. And they consult with experts. I don't know what experts, but some experts to figure out how they could appropriately remove this and preserve evidence. At that time, they said they were treating the case as a homicide until an autopsy could be performed and make a final determination. Okay. What made them think, like what immediately at that point made them think we should treat this as a homicide? There was enough to make them think, they didn't think to begin with that it was an accident.
Yeah.
But it took until May 3rd for them to get the Cruze out of the water, and they actually drained it right there in the parking lot. Other than some damage to the front panels, the car was in pretty good condition. They ended up loading it up onto a tow truck and taking the car to a secure facility with Daniela's remains still inside. They confirmed on the 3rd that it was the Cruze that belonged to Daniela and that the remains were those of an adult female. Chief Batiste gave a press conference and he said he could not say how long the vehicle had been in the water, could not say whether it had been pushed or driven in. He also could not confirm the position the body was found in and stated investigators would unlikely be able to determine the location of the body when the vehicle entered the water. I guess that makes sense.
That's true. I mean, we don't really, again, odd things happen.
Well, I guess I can understand that without getting into too many details. Yes,
yeah.
On May 5th, so 2 days later, Julie tells media that she believes the body found in the car is Daniela. Mobile police haven't confirmed at that point that they're Daniela's. However, all signs pointed in that direction. And one thing that Julie said was, you think it's going to be closure to finally find out because that's your goal.
Just a numbing realization, you know, and that's what you've been working for so long and striving for and begging for and praying for. And when you finally get that, it's not closure. Of course, I want to know what happened to her. I want to know eventually. But really, all of that is kind of unsubstantial. It just doesn't really matter because she's gone now. You know, why she's there doesn't really matter to me anymore. You know, all it's going to do is let me know what she went through before she died.
On May 10th, they held a vigil at the boat launch. Again, they were requesting that anybody who had any information about how Daniela ended up in this area, 17 miles away, in the back of a residential neighborhood, which from everything we've been told, she had no reason to even be familiar with this area. I mean, she wasn't from Mobile. Her hub was out there in that West Mobile area-ish. And so, like, this is the last place, obviously,
yeah,
that anybody would thought. On May 14th, the preliminary autopsy and toxicology reports came back as inconclusive. They stated the preliminary investigation, Mobile Police Department, the preliminary investigation revealed that the condition of the car was consistent with that of an accident and that the investigation is still ongoing. Their early investigation revealed that certain manipulations to the inside of the vehicle indicated that Daniela had been alive when her car entered the water. The vehicle was in park. The keys were in the ignition. And I think turned on.
Yeah, it said it was in the on position.
The emergency brake was engaged. The doors were locked. And the rear driver's side window, the article says, was down about 2 inches. But that's not, unless like it moved once it came out of the water, like when you look at the pictures, it is definitely way more than 2 inches.
The video actually shows the window down about 2/3 of the way.
Okay. She did all that in a panic.
Yeah.
Is what they're saying.
Granted,
when she hit the water, possibly there were some electrical malfunctions. But in the Chevy Cruze, it's kind of weird, actually. Lock, unlock is over on, like, the radio dash area.
Yeah.
It's, like, right under the volume button or something. It's not on the door panel. And so I could see where they could have accidentally been locked if she was, like, panicking and hitting buttons or whatever. But they're not. They were told that she was found in the driver's seat with no seatbelt on. Now, how does that correlate with that previous statement if they would not know where her body was when she went into the water? If she was found in the driver's seat and it's consistent with an accident, wouldn't you assume she was in the driver's seat when it went in? But again, I guess maybe that's an assumption. I guess she could have just got back in the driver's seat. I guess that's one of those statements that came from the podcast, the Case File podcast. On May 14th, NBC 15 did an interview with Chief Batiste, and it said, at the time, early investigation revealed that evidence supported the death of the young mother who was missing for more than 10 months, or for 10 months, was likely an accident. This is still an active investigation, but everything that we have found to this point indicates to us, or appears to us, to be an accidental incident. According to law enforcement, there are certain manipulations of instrumentation inside the car that could have only occurred after the car entered the water. NBC 15 was aware of what the information was, but law enforcement requested that they not release that information until the investigation was concluded. So there's a specific Lanyap interview that I was looking for, and they did one in May that talked about the fact that people follow true crime stories. And so they talked about all of the Facebook groups and social media activities surrounding it and web sleuths, which is, I love web sleuths. Okay, so there are still multiple Facebook groups and pages dedicated to Vianne's case with hundreds of members. There are also several threads about Vianne on websleuths.com, which is an internet community focused on crime and missing persons. Last week, Chief Batiste said MPD's initial investigation of the area where Vianne's submerged car was found showed signs consistent with an accident. Even as he made that announcement, the live comments coming in on social media were incredulous. Batiste dismissed those comments when asked about them, saying that MPD would use every resource at its disposal to find a perpetrator if any sign of foul play was found. In the meantime, though, the level of skepticism in Mobile and beyond hasn't subsided much. Then they find out that her car, the Cruise, was put up on a Ukrainian auction website. Batiste said they didn't actually sell the car, but it had been released from their possession because the car was financed. They had to release it to the owner of the car. And she had only made a single payment on the vehicle at the time she disappeared, so it had to be returned to Pearl Motors and Progressive Insurance Company. Which I guess if they've done all the forensics they can possibly do on it, I get. But it's a little odd. Yeah. Like, is there not an exception to that rule? Like,
yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I guess how much time had passed, I guess, maybe. But still, it just seems weird.
This was a little over a year later.
Yeah. I guess in a year, if they can't get anything else from the...
Yeah. Batiste did say that investigators had gone bumper to bumper to recover any possible evidence and that they recovered the EDR, the black box, and had turned it over for digital analysis. That's why we requested records from the FBI. Batiste was asked by Lanyap why the case was still considered open if they thought that her death was an accident. And Batiste said, it isn't uncommon for cases without a definitive cause of death to remain open, even when police have a strong theory about what may have happened. The cause of death was determined to be most likely accidental, but because there's no definitive answer, it will always remain open. If someone could bring forth evidence, we would look into it. But because there is somewhat of an undetermined status, it will always be considered somewhat open. Somewhat open.
Somewhat.
How are you somewhat open?
It's either open or it's not open.
You're open or you're closed. Yeah. There is no like halfway.
Yeah.
You know why it's somewhat open? So that nobody can request records.
Yeah.
Okay. That may not be it, but like that's why I think.
It's the impression we get quite often.
Like if you leave it in this perpetual open status, then you really have no reason to provide records because you've got that nice little privilege from our very restrictive Open Records Act that allows you to withhold active investigation documents. And it can even extend to closed investigations, honestly. But like, it should be viewed as what is in here that could potentially be released to the public. But instead, it's viewed as a broad blanket excuse to not provide anything. Oh, sorry. Check out this statute. Yeah. Nope, we're not giving you anything.
Yeah, there's a couple counties out there that do that, I think.
That it's frustrating, especially when you're years down the road and like it's only somewhat open. Okay, well, if you're not going to do anything with it at this point, then go through, redact the names that don't need to be released and release the rest of the crap to the public. Yeah. And it's not crap. It's important.
Withhold what you think might be important to,
yeah,
you know, verify truth in the case. But
it's called redaction for a reason. Yes. Like, take out the things that don't need to be public. And I get why that has to happen sometimes, because if you've got names in there or, you know, false information, like somebody heard that Joe Smith over here did it and he didn't, then
clearly you want to redact his name because, you know, that's the whole point of having secret grand juries.
Yeah.
Because if no indictment comes down, then you're not tarnishing somebody's good name.
Yeah.
Why hold it back? Like, why? Why hold everything back?
Yeah. I need to pull out that soapbox.
Yes. Exactly. Oh, I was only a somewhat soapbox. So here's kind of what I was looking for in that article before I found that somewhat open investigation. It said, according to Batiste, details about the area around Bayou Sara and some of the conditions of Vian's car what led police to believe her car was driven into the water and she was unable to get out in time. Reversed into the water. You know, what do I know? I mean, in my head, they just pull it straight up from where it's at with these little airbags and it comes up out of the water like it was sitting at the bottom of the water, but maybe I'm wrong. So then Batiste says, once they found the vehicle, I actually went up there after dark to get an idea of what it would look like driving in the area. And I saw how quickly you could find yourself driving off into the water. True story. Like I said, it dead ends into the water. There's no flashing light or like warning to my knowledge, or wasn't at the time, of like, hey, this road's going to end in the water.
Yeah.
He said, it's my understanding that there's only 2 or 3 feet before that boat ramp drops off. Around 10 feet. Okay. But she wasn't found right off the boat ramp.
No.
At least not based on what the news photos look like. So Batiste went on to say, we believe she might have realized she was in the water, but a lot of the things in the car are electrically powered. Things like the door latches immediately become inoperable.
Yeah, I would say looking at this video, yes, it probably floated out, but it would have been quite a ways out.
I mean, because, you know, it's not going to go down immediately. But I've watched those YouTube videos of people testing these things. It goes down nose first because that's the heaviest. And there is going to be a current that's going to push it. You are going to float. I mean, if you go out there but again, that's a floaty and you're on top of the water. I mean, if you're just like floating on a raft, even if there's really not a huge current, you're still gonna move.
Right.
So possibly, just going back to potentially. I'm not an expert in this area.
Yeah.
So all of Vian's personal belongings. Okay. He said all of her personal belongings, including her purse and cash, were left in the vehicle. Not all of her personal belongings.
Yeah, I think that was a little overstatement.
Somebody had her car. I mean, her cell phone.
Yeah, that was quite not.
Yeah.
The greatest statement.
Yeah. He said it ruled out any kind of robbery. I guess if they were going to rob her, they would have taken all her cash. He did not say how much cash was in there. He also said while there was no indication of any kind of physical trauma, they acknowledged advanced decomposition made detecting some kinds of potential injuries impossible.
That's understandable.
Understandable. He did not offer any explanation for how her or her car might have wound up in Bayou Sara that night, but he said they were more than willing to investigate any new lead in the case. We poured every resource in this case we had available to us as a department. And if there is anyone who comes forward with new information, we won't hesitate to look into it. But her mother actually did give a statement on the 14th. And it said, Bill and I have been notified that the homicide unit at this point is leaning towards an accident. We are heartbroken and devastated about these findings. Daniela's father and I still have hope in the homicide division due to the fact that they have not closed the case and it is still ongoing. There is yet to be a positive ID of our daughter, Daniela Vian. Please continue to keep our daughter, Daniela, in your prayers. Thank you, Joy and Bill Vian. And then on June 10th, the DNA results come back and confirm that it was, in fact, Daniela. That's like a year after she gave birth, almost. A little more.
Yeah, it is. That's a long time.
In June 2020, that's when Daniela's car goes up. The notes indicated there were no keys to the vehicle and that it had sustained flood damage. The photos of the interior of the car showed that the back passenger seatbelt had been completely removed. And also, it looks like the
steering wheel is broken, right?
Yeah.
So if she was in the front seat, if that steering wheel had been broken when they pulled it out, then you would assume she would have been in the driver's seat because wouldn't it have held her down?
Yeah, you would think.
On March 8th, friends and family gathered at Medal of Honor Park for Daniela's birthday. And they actually planted a tree in her honor, which I thought was kind of cool. And then on May 27th of 2022, we launched our petition for the Alabama Victims and Families Rights Act. Daniela's case is one that is in our petition. Like I said, it's the one that actually kind of pushed it because here you have this case that's sitting in the somewhat active investigation status.
Yeah.
We couldn't get records. We were denied those records. The family hasn't been able to get records. They don't even get updates at this point because I guess it's somewhat closed would be the other way to say it, except for you can't use the word closed because then they might actually have to release something. In circumstances like this, if you truly believe it's an accident, and it may very well have been, I'm not going to say it wasn't. I think there are questions that are worth trying to get an answer to, like how she ended up 17 miles away from where she was last seen and who are the people that are on those audio recordings? Because if it's two different females, then I don't really see how she could have driven 17 miles away in that state.
Yeah.
She was not coherent if that was her in the first one. For families that are looking at these kind of answers, or like this is the resolution to your case, why don't they have the ability to see more of what actually led them to that deciding factor?
Yeah.
Like a better answer, because it is just weird. Like she's has these goals, she has this daughter she loves tremendously, she's worked by all appearances, like things are starting to really work out for her.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think she would intentionally do it.
That's
always a possibility because you don't ever really know what people are going through
before. Different things happen. You could have just been the wrong thing heard or said or whatever at the wrong time. And
the location of it is just so weird to me because it's so small. That launch is so small and it's in this neighborhood with several. You don't just like turn on one road and just in there. Like you kind of have to know where you're going.
It is really weird. I mean, you could even say like if it had been at the, like, right off the end of, whatever, 65 or, what is it, Highway 90 that's, like, right, intersects really close to the Shell station. Or even one of the side roads that goes, you know, pretty much all the way through. None of them lead to that area. She literally would have to have gone through neighborhoods and trying to drive around. And, you know, I mean, like, if she thought she was going home, I don't believe, I'd have to look closer, but I don't believe that it's a neighborhood that had a lot of apartments.
No, and it's not. So, it's all houses.
Yeah. So she had to have known that she wasn't in the right area. So
unless they're trying to say that she was
that, incoherent. Yeah. I just don't think she could have maneuvered all those those turns around all those areas.
So there's a Facebook group called Justice for Daniela Vianne by MPCN. And Sean has been like very vocal in this. And there was a post in 2022 and said, the friend that took Daniela's bracelet and other keepsake a week after she went missing, the friend that told people she took $1,200 from Daniela's apartment is the same girl that said herself she failed not one, but three polygraphs. Where this came from is there's some handwritten notes, and I'm not sure. It says that Hannah's mom told Daniela she could just leave and start over anywhere. On 7/16, Hannah claims she test drove Daniela's car. I don't know what that means. And it says, Tuesday, texting back and forth. Daniela looks for Hannah's car at the mall. 7:36, she says she's drinking at the sports bar. Never says she's at Heroes.
Yeah.
It said Hannah missed a call at 9:16. Said she got a Snapchat at 9:45 from inside the car. and said she tried to call back at 10. Then at 7:30 Wednesday morning, Hannah sends a text that said, "You good?" Hannah and her boyfriend went to Danielle's apartment and sat outside for hours. Also said she went inside and removed some things and took some things that she knew Daniela wouldn't want anyone to see. Took $1,200 instead of $65 and keepsakes, jewelry, headband, and claimed that Daniela was paid for the adoption. This says Hannah called Pearl Motors asking them to track Daniela's car. She said she didn't. It said Hannah goes to Daniela's apartment, then shows up at the police department to give, quote, her side of the story.
Her side of the story? That's a weird way to put
it. Yeah. So on July 27th, 2022, Shauna reposted the vigil, which I think is going to be the first one that they did. This is July 27th, 2018, so 10 days later. And Shauna points out that Hannah has a bracelet on in the video and that the bracelet was Daniela's.
Interesting.
Julie actually had messaged Randy asking and sent a picture and said, "This is the shirt that Daniela was wearing that night." And then asked, was he sure she had on jeans? Because she just wanted to put factual information out there because the police were still reporting she was wearing black leggings. And asked if there was any way he could get a still picture of her that night from the surveillance. He said he would try and talk to the owner to see if he could look at the tape and that he was pretty sure it was jeans. And then asked who was saying it was black leggings. She said cops, everyone, because that's what Denson told them. They didn't feel an accurate description was important, but I do. He said, "I'm not sure if my owner will let me, but I'll check with him tomorrow. I feel like the cops have told him not to let anyone see the videos but them." And then he says, I mean, this is in December or whatever. "I'll try my hardest. I honestly am not sure if they have anything, and they just don't want to say that." And she said, "I don't know. I'm just hoping they do." He said, "Me and you both, Julie, I know it kills you because it eats me alive. I dream about her all the time and think about her daily." She said, "I know that anytime there's a body found, they rush to let me know that it is not her, as in they look into it quick. That tells me they don't feel she's alive." And Randy said, "I'm not giving up faith that she's alive until I'm proven otherwise. I'll tell you that. I just really miss her." Julie said, "I know. I'm not either. I'll keep going until we find her." And he said, "You and me both, Julie, I can't live with unanswered questions and just not knowing." Now, if I remember right, I don't think he went to any of the vigils.
That's really weird. I mean, I guess I didn't realize. I knew they were friends, but I didn't. He sounds awfully enamored with her.
They worked together for a while, from my understanding.
Wasn't at any of the vigils. Huh? Of course, I guess they can't really judge that either, because some people just can't do those things.
Oh, look, here's me bitching in this group. "The request for records from Maple Police Department was denied, citing a subpoena was needed to release the records. This is something we'll keep working on, and we're not the only ones. After Daniela was found, former police chief Batiste told Laniap that her case would always be somewhat open, even if they had a fairly good idea about what happened. However, if someone brought forth credible information, they would investigate it." I said, "I believe Daniela's case remains open so that the right person can bring that information forward." I said, "When going back through the press conferences, I realized there's very little information officially released by Mobile Police Department. When asked about the surveillance footage, the question was dodged, and Batiste would not confirm or deny any footage, even though NBC either had it or would obtain it shortly thereafter. Maybe the quality was bad, but why didn't Mobile Police Department release the video themselves?" Because actually, it was like 2 weeks after she went missing, a guy comes into a gas station and he shoots two people, and they released that footage of that dude coming in. So, what? Joy actually made a post in March of 2021 that said, "I'm reaching out. I want to talk to Denson White. I want to hear your side of what happened that night with Daniela Vianne. What you've told me when we filed her report doesn't add up. You gave your statement to police and then just disappeared. You have the answers that will help us find out what happened to her. If anyone knows Denson, will you please forward this to him? Please share. I would ask to speak to Randy Capps, but all we've gotten from you are lies." Okay, he goes to the police. Denson goes to the police station. He filed to file the report with her or whatever, gives a statement voluntarily. I mean, he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, there's two sides to every coin, right? Like, yeah, no, he didn't have to do that. And was he just doing it out of the kindness of his heart? That, and also it's kind of like CYA, like, I was the last one potentially to see her alive. So, like, this doesn't look good. But maybe he is just genuinely a nice guy.
Yeah. Could be.
It's like almost immediately, like, his spidey senses were going off. Like, something's not right here, because he goes through all this extra effort. But all in all, I mean, that's really not the weirdest thing that happened that night. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think the weirdest thing was the fact that that GPS that was working for so long, just fine,
just happened to stop
when she went to that gas station. In Denson's defense, he did pull over to see why she was flashing her lights. He did go back to Dumlin's and get her phone. He did hold on to it, and he did try to contact her multiple times, and he did call Julie. I mean, he did all of these things. And so, like, going back to that whole there's two sides of every coin, did he do all of this because he was a nice guy?
I don't think her car ending up in the water was an accident. I don't think her driving that far without her phone and driving her car into that water through this windy, snaky neighborhood. I'm not to say it couldn't happen. I don't think it did.
Shauna Hayden was a close friend. She and others are not satisfied with the explanation that Daniela's death was an accident.
If they want to say it's an accident, okay, well, here we are. What makes it an accident?
If there's evidence that refutes that, then we're certainly going to follow up.
So if Daniela's car could be evidence, why was it just auctioned off? The joyful sounds of kids on a playground, children playing with their mothers. Something little Cora will never get to do again. Yet there's no easy way to explain to her why.
She knows her mom passed. She asked me, and then she knows we found her. She asked me where. You know, that I couldn't tell her. She's not ready for that. You know, she's too young for that. It feels like a lifetime, but it also feels like it was yesterday.
As little Cora grows up without her mother.
The two of them would sit in front of the mirror and do makeup together. And she'll go in there and, this looks like mommy did it, you know. she'll do her makeup and say, yeah, this looks like what mommy used to do. One of Cora's last memories is doing tie-dye t-shirts with her mom in the front yard. You know, and those are getting small now, so we're having to put them up. You know, we're not getting rid of them. They're getting put up.
So this is where we end Daniela's case for now. There's so much left in the air, and her family and friends just want to have definitive answers. Things just don't seem to be cut and dry. They don't seem to add up. And we hope that if anyone has any information about that night, that they will come forward and a resolution can be found, especially for her daughter. We know this has been a lot of information to soak in. We encourage you to go to our social media pages and discuss or ask questions. We still have a lot of questions ourselves. If you have any information, you can reach out to the Mobile Police Department tip line by calling or texting at 844-251-0644 on their website, or you can contact us directly either by email at info@alcoldcase.com or on our website. We'll have all of this information along with the episode details, as usual.
Since Alabama Cold Case Advocacy's creation, we have dedicated innumerable hours to researching and networking in an effort to provide the largest platform we can to the cases we share. We shoulder all associated expenses with Alabama Cold Case Advocacy, including the subscription fees for researching and production of the Unforgotten podcast, to provide a cost-free avenue for the victims' families of those cases.
We hope you will join in our efforts to raise awareness of Alabama's missing and murdered and support these families who have been forced to carry the immeasurable loss of their loved ones and the fight for answers. If you appreciate our mission and you are inspired to make a donation, your extra support will enable the ACCA to continue our research, share the cold cases, and help those families know that they are also unforgotten.
Unforgotten is an Alabama Cold Case Advocacy podcast recorded in conjunction with Riverside FM, hosted and distributed by Red Circle to your favorite podcast platforms. Content, research, artwork, and production are by Sellers and Stormy of Alabama Cold Case Advocacy. Credits for music, sound clips, special mentions, and research sources can be found in each episode's description. Your support helps us continue producing Unforgotten and further Alabama Cold Case's mission of advocacy and awareness. There are a few ways you can help us light the path. Make a one-time or monthly donation to Unforgotten through Red Circle. Sign up for a one-time or recurring donation through the ACCA website. Or subscribe to the Unforgotten Patreon channel for early access to ad-free episodes. You will find the links for all three in our episode descriptions. Another cost-free way to be of great help is to follow us on social media. But most importantly, whatever you do, tell everyone you know about these cases. Sharing their stories is one of the most effective ways to help find resolution for Alabama's cold cases. Be the spark. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, justice may be delayed, but the victims and their families remain unforgotten.
Good. You did good on that one.
Thanks.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.